Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 778, Project Mjolnir, recorded on May 1st, 2021. Three, two, one. Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special version of the podcast, your second dose of Podtacular this week. We have the honor and privilege to have with us on board again, Installation 00 on the podcast. Welcome back to Podtacular.
Hey. How you doing, bud?
Doing well. You've grown quite a bit in terms of YouTube popularity and a couple of crazy projects you're now undertaking, which is why we are having you on for today. But you seem to be doing well, and everything's going well with the YouTube stuff and the merch, and we'll get to the project stuff in a little bit. How you doing?
Good. Not enough hours in the day, but I've grown fairly well since the last time I was on, I think. On top of just the YouTube videos, obviously we've got sort of the weekly episodic sort of cartographer videos going on with Dashy at the moment, so I'm getting a load of other YouTubers in to collaborate with that. We've had Fletch on already. We've got practically all the other Halo YouTubers lined up for the rest of Halo 2 and mainly Halo 3. Yeah, I launched the merch store on my website, installation00.co.uk, and I've made basically it started with making Patreon perks, and then once all the patrons got that, got their perks, it was time to sort of start developing new perks. But then I had a load of stuff sat around that I thought, well, people might like this. So, yeah, started up the web store, and then, yeah, Project Mjolnir on top of that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a glutton for punishment.
And we'll get to Project Mjolnir here in a little bit. There's a couple of things that when we had you on the podcast last time, we were waiting to see how things panned out. There was a race, an unofficial race to 100,000 followers on YouTube or 100,000 subscribers. And I think it was like you, Ultimate Halo, Uber Nick, and a couple of other content creators. And I believe you eked out in the end, right?
Just about, yeah, yeah. It was instigated by me in the first place, to be fair. It was I noticed that I was closing quite quickly with Fletch from Ultimate Halo, and awesome guy, and I just thought he likes a bit of banter, so I just sort of called him out on Twitter and said, you know, I'm closing the gap, and I think he sent back like a sweating GIF emoji, which was just awesome. And then that sort of got the attention of Uber Nick and Slipspace Entertainment. We were all sort of within the like 85k to 90k bracket.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, then there was a hell of a push to 100k, and yeah, I by the skin of my teeth, I got there just ahead of everyone else, which is nice. And now I've got my sights set on the next big milestone, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, you're up to 113 now, and can continue to grow with the never-ending train of content that seems to be coming from your channel. And it seems like every month there's some kind of new video series or project that you're undertaking in your content creation.
Yeah, I'm a glutton for punishment.
Do you ever sleep?
Not much. No. No, it's I got like the few big series that I'm sort of majorly well known for. Obviously, the most detailed breakdown is kind of my trademark, so to speak. That's my niche, but they take a long time to produce because I insist on getting down to the real nitty gritty of whatever it is I'm talking about. And if there's not enough information on it, I want to infer the information from reliable sources, and it's a lot of research for a most detailed video. So then I started the channel with just doing the most detailed series, which is why the first I think six or seven videos were most detailed breakdowns, but they were 4 or 5 weeks apart. So I thought I've got to do something a little bit more consistent. That's where Lore and Theory came in. That's just sort of spitballing ideas and looking at lore at different sort of different ways and just trying to deliver it in my own kind of unique way. And then gradually over time, new series of come online like the Armory and Classified Materials, where I get the very talented Kat Peterson to voice Halsey and read through excerpts from Halsey's journal.
Mm-hmm.
The John 117 series, which is kind of a big collaboration of artists and stuff like that. So I read through basically John's entire military career, and each step of the way I ask artists to give designs and renders and CAD models and anything they can do, even music and things like that, to overlay onto the video. So it's not only just a story about John, but it's a story about the community. And then, yeah, most recently, The Cartographer, where myself and my co-host Dashy Jinx is playing through every single level of Halo. But we're doing like an anti-speed run, which is like,
yeah,
going through as slow as possible to find all the nitty-gritty details.
Right. It's like director's commentary, but you're looking for all the small minutia of things that people may or may not have known about in the games, and
yeah,
probably finding Easter eggs, lore, all that fun stuff.
That's it. I'm just trying to diversify, but still kind of remain true to kind of the brand, my brand, so to speak, what people have come to expect from me. Because if you just become a one trick horse, that can easily be taken away if something changes in the environment.
Certainly.
If you're diversifying, you can weather the storm a bit more. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, just every hour that is sent to me, I try to use as best I can.
And then last time you were on the show, I think you teased this. It wasn't out quite yet, or maybe it just had come out. But you were starting a new channel, Lorecore.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Lorecore is an interesting one because. Initially, I've been on the wall. I've been on the fence about it for quite a while now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically a way for me to cover other franchises other than Halo and give like various bits and pieces the most detailed breakdown. So by now I've done the most detailed breakdown of the Nanosuit 2 from Crysis. I've done the most detailed breakdown of the Praetor suit from Doom.
Ooh.
And I've done a load of other videos, sort of just fleshing out things from different franchises that I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm because a lot of games that are like, so for example, with Mass Effect, I used to really love Mass Effect back in the day, and now they're kind of relaunching it. It's remastered and stuff, but it's the same lore, it's the same stuff, it's the same story, and I was kind of struggling basically to get into a flow state, so to speak, with the other franchises and find consistent content.
Mm-hmm.
But I've noticed recently that people seem to be gravitating to, like, I hold frequent Discord chats in my Discord, and people are gravitating towards coming into the Discord chats, and we end up just having like these really deep conversations about like science and technology and reality and the universe, and it's just like those really, you know, those conversations where you get into and you know you're talking about the deep stuff, and it's just those, yeah, really visceral, powerful conversations. People have been gravitating towards those calls for that reason, and I'm thinking I might reappropriate Lorecore to be a little bit more about that and a little less about trying to struggle to make content for,
mm-hmm,
for other game franchises. But I'm still on the fence about it. I mean, it's gained good traction, and I still get frequent demands of, you know, what things I should be looking at and doing videos on. But
right,
it's a juggling act, and I think it might just pop if I have like a different format and a little bit more casual, even if it's sort of screen capture or like record like the Discord discussions, you know, in a manner of speaking, just something. Sure. Yeah, something so people can get in on those deep conversations, but also so I can maintain the content level coming out on Lorecore. But I'm still in the air about it. We'll see.
Okay, very nice. And then with the 100,000 subscribers, we finally got to see who you were, the man behind the microphone and
yes,
behind the videos.
Yes, I kept the face reveal low key, but. Yeah, it's. I think it's because my style of content, I suppose. I mean, like, so if you look at the other YouTubers, like Hidden Xperia, like, you know, Fletch from Ultimate Halo.
Yep.
Their some of their content is kind of news based and things like that. I don't cover news of what's going on in you know, like the development of Infinite and other stuff that's going on in the Halo universe as much as these other guys do.
Right.
So their content kind of fits like this kind of format where they got a camera set up and they can talk it through. With my kind of style of content, because I of the level of detail I want to get into for a lot of the stuff I do, I have to script basically most of what I talk about, because there's no way like one person can retain the amount of information I put into like a most detailed breakdown. It's just not doable. And then that's not entertaining for the person watching to be basically staring at the side of my head while I read off a script.
Right. So, and plus you have other graphics that you want to use to help reinforce whatever you're talking about or kind of show visually to support whatever you're trying to come like get across to people watching. So that makes sense.
That's it. Yeah. So I've done the face reveal. I'm no longer hiding my mug, so to speak. but it certainly doesn't mean that every single video is going to be me, you know, sort of pressed up against the camera and right. You know, making uncomfortably long eye contact and stuff like that. It's going to be the normal kind of content, but every now and then I'll just flash my face and say hi.
Right. Well, so let's get to the big new thing that you have going on. Project Mjolnir. Give us the elevator pitch, and then we'll dive into it in more detail.
Okay, so Project Mjolnir is actually about 15 years in the making. Back in college, I did electronic and computer engineering, and I started to realize in college that there's a lot of technology that I was kind of coming into contact with, which could be synonymous to or could be adapted for something like a powered exoskeleton like Mjolnir.
Mm-hmm.
So 15 years ago, I started sort of drafting ideas and concepts and designs and things like that about how you could in theory go about making something like Mjolnir real, but with modern technology. But obviously when I was in college, as I'm sure many other college students will agree, money isn't exactly something I had in abundance.
Right.
So any progress, you know, to actually building this stuff was glacial, basically. It just wasn't moving.
Mm-hmm.
I went through uni. I did my qualifications at uni. I went out into industry. And obviously then the YouTube channel kind of came along, and I kind of revisited quite early on, actually, in the YouTube sort of train, so to speak, the YouTube momentum. Mm-hmm. I revisited those old ideas and designs and started fleshing them out a bit more. And then I realized probably about nine to 10 months ago, I realized actually this is more doable than I realized it is.
Oh.
So I started.
Nice little epiphany.
Yeah, so I started collating things a little bit better. I started putting a bit more of a proper project proposal together, and then I thought, well, now I've kind of got a platform. Now I've got an audience, and now I've got people that are passionate about Halo and about Master Chief's armor and you know the absolute powerhouse that it is. I thought, well, surely there's got to be other people out there that are as interested in this as me and or as keen to achieve this sort of stuff as me. And I just put two and two together, and then I formally announced that I was building a real life version of Mjolnir. So for the past 10 months, I've been quietly creating things in my workspace outside, and then literally, I think April 5th, I announced formally that I'd started the GoFundMe. I've broken the whole project down into three phases, and we're in phase one at the moment, and the support for it has just been tremendous, absolutely tremendous, and I've been surging ahead every possible moment I can to try to really push things forward. But yeah, so long story short, I'm building a real version of Mjolnir. Yeah,
he's building the suit.
Yes,
the iconic suit.
Indeed.
Now you mentioned in your announcement video you're doing the Mark IV Mjolnir.
Yes.
Any particular reason why you're doing that one? What kind of led you to having that specific armor be your goal?
Yeah, the Mark IV more quintessentially sums up the goals of the project that I'm personally trying to achieve. in the lore, the Mark IV was the first proper man-sized wearable suit of power armor. It didn't have energy shields. I think the earliest versions didn't even have the fusion power plant. I think it actually had a fission reactor to power it, which I'll just substantiate and say I'm not planning on putting a nuclear reactor in this thing.
For now.
Yeah, for now. maybe down the line. Yeah, we'll talk about it, you know, later on. But the Mark IV is it's also a little bit more. It's not kind of nuts and boltsy, so to speak. But you when you look at the Mark IV, especially the Mark IV that you see in like Halo Wars, the Spartans of Red Team wearing, it looks tanky. It looks like a powered exoskeleton kind of should look like, so to speak, because I thought the Mark V was a little bit too clunky, a little bit too. It's not that it hasn't aged well, so to speak, but it doesn't as closely fit the aesthetic of what I'm going for. And plus, it also brought into the forefront the energy shield systems, and that's something we can't do with technology at the moment.
Right.
It's just too far out from a technological standpoint. And the Mark VI is way too streamlined to be achievable, you know, nowadays. So the Mark IV seemed the most logical suit to go with. And the way in which the whole Mjolnir program, so to speak, works is that I think they called it a helical development process, effectively, where they develop a platform. So they say they develop the Mark IV platform, but they also develop a load of testbed prototypes that they then put on different Mark IV platforms to field test. Then when they get the diagnostic data back from those field tests, they find out what worked, what didn't work, and then they get integrated into the Mark V platform. But then the Mark V platform goes out with testbed prototypes of the Mark VI platform. They go out, then they come back in. And all the while, they're also liaising with different contractors outside, and there's different organizations making different components for Mjolnir. And all this technology feeds out of Mjolnir's program out into the wider UNSC, which is why like the ODST's visor systems were upgraded over time, and why I think in some cases ODST armor was given full negation. It was given some of them were given refractive coatings to deal with heat better, like plasma weapons better. And then eventually that feeds back into the project again, in that now the kind of the newer generations of Mjolnir, and even the Gen 3 as detailed in the recent books, has something similar to the visor that the ODSTs had. So it's kind of a back and forth development process. And the reason that's significant is because the technology that I'm trying to build into this real life working version of Mjolnir can proliferate and become their own standing products, basically their own products in their own right, marketable products. And the hope is that if I can get those out into the world, it will kind of seed interest in these particular types of technology, and that will backfeed hopefully in time back into the project.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of why I went for the Mark IV and why I like the kind of the development cycle, so to speak, of the armor.
Got it. It sounds very similar to kind of the back and forth that you see in like military upgrades of hardware. So like you start with a platform, then you add stuff on it, and then that defines the next generation of the platform and all that kind of stuff. So it seems like it's a very just your typical like industry contracting rollover of platforms and generation to generation improvements, that kind of stuff. So that seems like it's a pretty standard process that you're kind of sticking with on your development there. You mentioned that you have three phases. So what are the three different phases of the development for the armor?
So we're in phase one at the moment. Phase one encompasses, I'm kind of building it in the same way, I suppose in the reverse way to how I do the most detailed breakdowns. Usually with the most detailed breakdowns, I start with the outer layer and work inwards. This time in this project, I'm working from the inside out. So phase one deals with the skin tight undersuit, the environment systems, and as kind of a show of force, so to speak, I'm starting with the helmet as well, so because the helmet sort of finishes the seal of the environment systems.
Gotcha.
So that's phase one. Phase two then moves over to the robotic systems, so the actual articulation systems, the power behind how the armor moves. Mm-hmm. That involves a lot of muscle sensors and trying to, you know, sort of bridge the gap between man and machine. And it also involves the soft armor, so the kind of the armored undersuit, or what some people would call the tech suit of Mjolnir.
Mm-hmm.
And then phase three is the big armor plates and the power source, effectively, on how to get all of this to cohesively run together. They're the three main phases, so to speak, of the project.
Gotcha. That seems like quite an undertaking.
It certainly is.
You mentioned 15 years you're thinking to make it?
15 years in the making, yeah. And over that time, I suppose over that time, my proficiency has gotten better in kind of conceptualizing ideas and figuring out how it's all going to work and how it's all going to fit together. But yeah, just the amount of progress that I've made, I mean, in the past 10 months alone, because YouTube has allowed me to step out of work and YouTube to become my career, which is just bizarre in and of itself.
Right.
But yeah, to be able to step out and have additional free time that I can work on this stuff, the amount of development and progress that I've made in 10 months is just blows anything I did before that out of the water. And even just in these past, 3 weeks since the project went live, the amount of people that have kind of come forward and said, "Oh, I've got skills in this, I've got experience in that, I can help you with this."
That's great.
And the people coming forward and donating, I mean, it's just incredible to see the passion of the Halo community just shining through and rallying behind this project. And I suppose if you think about it, you got the Hacksmith, he's making like a real Iron Man suit. You've got another guy. Is it Adam? He's making an Iron Man suit as well, and he's actually made it so it's hydrogen fuel or hydrogen powered, and he's actually got repulsors. It's powered by hydrogen. He even uses the hydrogen to move pneumatic muscles. Really clever setup he's got.
Wow!
And I just figure if these guys are doing the Iron Man suit, why in the hell can't I do Mjolnir?
There you go. The major population probably knows the Iron Man suit, and then we've got all the video game nerds that know Halo.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just, you know, why isn't Halo getting its due? So
yeah,
there you go. I'm representing. I'm representing.
Yeah. Well, that's cool that people have really reached out to you. That was going to be one of my questions, but it sounds like people are already jumping on board with the idea. I'm trying to make sure I don't lose track of questions because I mean you're bringing up a whole bunch of new questions that come into my head.
Yeah.
So you've been kind of thinking on this and dawning on it for 15 years. How long do you think it's going to take to get through each phase as you start to realize it? And obviously, the fundraiser part is another part of it to actually allow you and support you to actually do it. But say that you got all the funding that you needed to do this, about how long do you think it'll take to from where you are now to get to that, I guess, initial full-on platform to test?
So the funding, you're absolutely right. The funding is kind of a big piece of the puzzle. We'll get
to that in a little bit.
Yeah, the funding I've asked for basically is going to secure the process of the process and development of phase one. And at the current rate of development, I'm confident that I will have all of phase one out of the way, more or less, in about 2 months.
Wow.
Because I've done a lot of the work already. The environment systems, I've finished the environment systems up, the function of the environment systems up the start of the week. And I'm now looking at integrating it all together and bringing it together into a single cohesive
unit
platform, so to speak. Yeah. The skin tight undersuit is pretty much straightforward. The only thing is I had to adapt the skin tight undersuit to have provisions for the muscle sensors, which is pretty straightforward, really. To cable manage, that's pretty straightforward. A custom port between the shoulder blades to link to the other computational systems that will go into the backpack of Mjolnir, that's relatively straightforward, especially with the 3D printers I've got here as well.
I bet you'll be using those a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I've already produced
a load of components that I've already broken and tested, and yeah. And then I was surprised by it, to be honest, but I realized once I started putting on these different layers, I realized it would be really, really difficult to go to the bathroom So I had to make provisions for that. So but that's relatively straightforward. That's pretty much sorted as well. So skin tightener suit and environment suit are pretty much already done, and I've got a lot of the hardware for the helmet already fleshed out. I'm literally just kind of putting it together now. And I've got access to engineering shops if I need them for sort of bespoke parts and unique one-offs and
mm-hmm.
this, that, and the other. But current rate of development, including everything I've already done, another 2 months. And yeah, I think phase one will be done. A full finished suit, again, dependent on funding, dependent on support. If it was fully funded and I could just surge ahead and money was no object, about a year and a half, I think.
Really? That fast?
That fast, yeah. Simply because, again, a lot of the work's already done. I mean, the Mark IV can be pulled from game assets. They're a Pepecura, Pepecura templates and things for Mark IV. There's cosplayers out there walking around wearing kind of foam core Mark IV suits. All of the groundwork for these CAD models are kind of already there. And the funny thing is that it's not what you know, it's who you know. A lot of the file form, absolutely, yeah. A lot of the file formats for a lot of the CAD models, especially for the armor plates, are transient. You can quite easily tweak them to be able to be either, made out of, cut from foam board, but then it's quite easy to move that over to be 3D printed, but it's also just as easy to move that over to be metal 3D printed or even CNC, machined.
Yep.
And with only minimal adjustments sort of to cover for like range of motion and things like that.
Yeah, because there's definitely the issue of in-game armor not necessarily translating to a humanoid figure.
Yeah, and I've already made a few sort of conservative tweaks with the models I've got to try to facilitate a more human form, but also a full range of motion. Because I'm sure everyone's aware, like if you actually look at the armor, there is a problem. Like if Chief was just raised his shoulder plate comes above here, it basically impacts his chest armor, effectively the top part of the chest armor.
Yep.
And that's no good. That's no good. But a lot of the groundwork's already done, and luckily, having my previous career experience and even some relatives in fields that kind of work with building a suit of Mjolnir, I'm in a very privileged position to be able to call upon them if I should need a little help in hand in getting things going.
Assistance.
Yeah.
Have you gotten any kind of feedback from 343 on what their thoughts are on this project yet, or is it still kind of one of those things that?
No, I think, as I recall, and this is coming from a source of one of my mods on the Discord,
mm-hmm.
he has a friend who actually works in 343, and apparently they're aware of it. They are aware of what
they're,
I'm doing.
They're always aware.
what I'm planning on doing. But I think like a lot of people, and I completely understand this, and I've seen a lot of comments about it on the update videos I've been doing, and on the announcements, and even in the Discord, that I think they're waiting for something tangible. And I completely get that. I completely understand that.
Yeah.
I've effectively, my proposal video was me sitting down like this and basically telling people I'm going to build Mjolnir and this is how I'm going to do it and I need your help. If I was a person just sat on the other side of a computer watching this person say, oh, I'm building Mjolnir, help me, I would be kind of, are you though?
Yeah.
Makes
sense.
I completely and utterly, I understand where people are coming from. So I figure that the thing that people are waiting for is something tangible, which is why I chose to make the helmet one of the first things I build. Because if I can come forward with a working helmet with integrated HUD systems, integrated mm-hmm. communication systems, a way to interface with the HUD, breathing systems to be able to pull fresh air in, filter it, pump used air out. If I can come forward with a proper, sort of prototype working version of a Mjolnir helmet, that's like a lightning rod to draw attention to it. And I'm sure if I can come forward with that and say, look, I can do what I say I can do, that I think will rally the troops, so to speak. That'll bring the our missing in action Spartans out of the woodwork.
You will get news outlets all over the place covering what you're doing.
Yeah. And the thing is, I spent a good degree of time in a company, in a career that was focused on electroactive polymers and quite advanced interface systems.
Okay.
So I do have on the job experience of doing this kind of thing. I just never thought that I'd apply those skills to Mjolnir of all things. But
yeah, to take a video game concept and actually bring it to life in the real world is
that's it.
Yeah, I mean, cosplay is one level.
Yeah,
you're completely just jumping over that leaps and bounds with this project. Yeah.
I mean, like I say, the proof is in the pudding, and I completely and utterly understand why there's a lot of people that are watching, but they're holding off, and I completely understand that 343 might be watching, but kind of holding off. I get it.
Yeah.
And I figure that if I can push really hard in this early stage and deliver something that's really significant,
mm-hmm.
it'll just prove that I'm not just some dude on the internet asking for money.
Right.
I can genuinely do what I say I can do. So, but hey, like I said, proof is in the pudding, and I'll keep pushing.
Maybe we'll see a Halo movie that actually has legit Mjolnir armor started by the community.
Yeah, it's going to be so heavy, but hey, we'll tackle those little problems down the way.
Get that carbon nanotube armor going.
Yeah.
Get all those advanced polymers that are like bleeding edge.
Yeah, yeah.
Lightweight but durable.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Is there a lot of support that you've gotten like from the... Well, so you mentioned you have some access to workshops that you can go to if you need help. And you have the background in the mechanical engineering and some of the integration system stuff. What other people have really come out to support this? Have cosplayers kind of helped come out to... help you with like the armor build, like you mentioned the Pepakura and some of the modeling stuff, and you mentioned some other folks in different areas of expertise kind of coming out and helping out. What's that diverse of support look like for you?
Yeah. So a load of people have come forward. I mean, I outwardly asked for some help for concept art mainly, because something I notice is that having images, so to speak, of concept moving through to reality, having like a trackable timeline is something that resonates with people and gets people excited. So I reached out for a load of some concept artists to help basically turn some really crude drawings and sketches and technical drawings I've done a couple of years ago and more recently, try to turn that into something that's much more kind of professional fidelity, professional quality.
Mm-hmm.
So I've actively reached out for some people, but there's been other people that have come forward cosplayers have come forward and given advice on how to fit the armor and shapes and cuts and things that might need to be made for flexibility and full range of motion. I've had people come forward. I suppose, again, it's the kind of content I create attracts a certain proclivity of people, a certain type mm-hmm. of people. So I think a lot of my followers are heavily biased towards engineering, science, technology, the STEM fields, basically.
Yeah, and that's the kind of content that you make. And like that, I was going to mention that earlier, and I'm happy you brought it up. But that kind of is your niche as far as the lore stuff within the Halo community, because you have a lot of lore folks, but they kind of really dig into the story stuff. Where you're a lot more of that technical. And I mean, you jump into the story bits, but you like to really dig into, well, why does this work this way, and how does this really apply to the way the universe is created and supported by all these STEM related topics with the splash of story in there.
That's it. That's the magic recipe that seems to be working. So I'm not going to knock it. Yeah. So a lot of guys have come forward who've got experience in engineering, and I've got a couple of guys who've come forward who are experienced in robotics and programming. Some CAD modelers have come forward, some electronics engineers have come forward. It's just the support that I'm seeing from the community, not just in obviously coming forward with you know their hard earned cash and saying here, you know, have some
money, good things.
and do awesome stuff. Yeah. But just the people coming forward and going, hey, I've done stuff similar to this. You might want to look at this, 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 and this. Try this out, try that out. And the amount of times, even in this early stage, that I've been wrestling with a little problem and it's been solved by someone else coming forward and going, just try that out. I've worked with this. I've done this before. I found this works. Give it a go. I've given it a go and it's bloody worked. So it's...
That's cool.
The support that people are showing is just absolutely utterly off the charts. And it's so like overwhelming and humbling to see so many people as passionate about this as I am. It's just, it's incredible. It really is.
That's great to see. Because Halo means, I mean, it holds a special place in a lot of video gamers' heart, but that cloud of gamers does extend beyond just the gaming sphere. So it's really cool to see all the support that you're getting for it. And it's kind of one of those cool thrills that this comes along once in a decade type of a thing where you take some kind of video game concept and it's puts into life, or even not just video games, but even for film industry. Like you mentioned the Iron Man suit earlier, there's a couple people trying to build their own version of the Iron Man suit. And people have tried to do like the tricorder from Star Trek.
Yeah.
So, and then the lightsaber from Star Wars.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's just,
I've always stood by the idea that in a lot of circumstances, sci-fi has actually paved the way for sci-fact.
Mm-hmm.
All these dreams
we want to have be realities, and then scientists get to it, it's like, we could do that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like way back when, like the earliest Star Trek, they had the communicator that flips out and they talk to say, it's a mobile phone. It's a flip mobile phone. And now we're carrying supercomputers around in our pockets because somebody looked at what they were holding and said, we could probably do that. Mm-hmm. Let's look into it. So it's just getting the right people with the right proclivity of I don't know, insistence on developing and getting to that.
Or stubbornness.
Yeah, stubbornness. That's it works. It works.
Proclivity, stubbornness, they're about the same thing.
roughly about the same, yeah. But the result is, you know, we've got mobile phones now because people were watching that thinking, oh, that's unrealistic. We'll never have phones that don't have wires plugged into them. But somebody sat there and went, well, no, that's not unrealistic. I'm sure there's a way we could do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, and now it's just a part of our lives. So I just don't, I don't see why a lot of the technologies that go into Mjolnir couldn't be synonymous to that. I mean,
sure,
the HUD systems alone, augmented reality, really has only had one big like significant public push, and that was with the Google Glass. That came and went, and that was it.
And now there's HoloLens being integrated into some military stuff now too.
Yeah, the only other significant thing, like you say, is the HoloLens, and at least to what I can see, that's not even for public availability, is it? I think it's just commercial and military, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I mean, you could buy it. Like, there's a community member. His name's Kevin Hurd. He was one of like the first Halo community members to get the HoloLens and do some really cool Halo specific stuff with it. Like, I think he made his own kind of Halo-ish HUD in HoloLens.
That's cool.
But
I might need to reach out to him then.
Yeah, you should. Halo Collector, that's kind of his main thing. But you could buy it as an individual if you wanted to fork up the money for it. But yeah, it's mostly commercial and industry right now.
Yeah. So like I say, the technology that goes into augmented reality is achievable, very achievable.
Mm-hmm.
We've got most of the technology we need to do it and do it well right now. And yet we're not. And I'm guessing the only reason that we're not doing that is because the big boys in industry haven't realized the niche for it yet. They haven't realized there is actually a demand for it yet. So I just want to show people that there is a demand for it. I mean, how cool would it be to walk around with a HUD? I mean, even a little module you could click onto your glasses arm or just a headset you put on and suddenly you've got information overlaid into your vision. You get, you know, get it linked to your phone. You can have your text messages pop up in your vision. Maybe get gesture control so you can swipe it away I don't know. The possibilities are endless.
It really is.
And it frustrates me that the technology is there, it's available, and we can do it, and we're not. Why? Why? Exactly.
A little bit of this.
Let's get it done. Let's get it done.
Which kind of leads into the next question of the GoFundMe. You have it out there. You made it. You made the announcement about a month ago.
Yeah.
You're looking for US wise about $200,000 in pounds, it's about 150,000 pounds. And that's, I'm assuming that's the cover pretty much end to end from phase one through phase three, as far as what you're able to kind of track down.
Not entirely, in fact. So I budgeted 150 initially with an offset of the amount of work that I've already done, but also with an offset in the understanding that as each phase comes to an end, there are technologies within whatever phase I'm in that can be reverse engineered quite easily and quite quickly to become viable products in their own right. And the foresight is that it might, you know, it could catch. If it doesn't, then I'll rethink. I'll revisit the scenario. But I've been told through my life, mainly by my mother, to trust my gut. And my gut's telling me that this feels like the right kind of process, the right kind of direction. But if it doesn't, I can revisit it. But
that's the joys and sorrows of being an entrepreneur. Is like you hope for these things to really take hold, but when it doesn't, it's like, well, I tried, on to the next thing.
That's it. Learn from the failure, move on.
Yep.
So the foresight is that, so with phase one, the foresight is at the end of phase one, I'll have a couple of products that could be marketable. Obviously one's going to be the helmet, so the HUD systems are going to be viable to be reverse engineered.
Gosh, imagine like being able to sell that for the automotive industry.
Exactly. Yeah.
Have it
in a visor in your motorcycle helmet. So, you know, I mean, I've said before, like you could have a module on the arm of your glasses, because the technology we're dealing with isn't massive. It's not very big. It's not very bulky. You could have a little module on the arm of your glasses, or just a headset you put on in general, or you know, a device that perhaps you carry in a pocket that links wirelessly to a device on your headset. It doesn't, you know, the details can switch and change, but
sure.
The important thing is that you get a visual display that allows you to have information from your smart device or whatever device you've got on you at the time overlaid onto your reality. Now, how much would that help if you could be a motorcyclist, but you could just be a person in a new town, in a new city. You don't really know your way around. You're walking around, you think, oh, I'm hungry, I could do with some lunch. Whip your smartphone out and say, okay, a few places, let's have a search around for a few places to eat. You find a place, you click it, and it automatically uploads onto your visual display a glowing line in the air that you just follow to the destination, you know? And if you have the right integration, especially with like the level of detail and data that Google has gone into for mapping things, you could be walking down a street and have literally in your visual range popping out little things about what each shop does, what each shop makes.
And then you have advertisers.
Oh yeah, advertisers. Yeah, yeah. Just have advertisers slap you in the face every 5 seconds.
Yeah, you walk by a Starbucks, it's like, come in, get 50 cents off your coffee or something like that.
Yeah, there's a flip side to everything, but yeah. But I mean, that would just be so cool, and the fact that the technology already exists, it just frustrates me. I mean, I had this weird little this weird brainwave fantasy, I suppose, ages ago. In theory, you could have, this is actually going off of a VR idea, but you could have a VR headset, and if you had a backpack with an arm on it with a camera mounted on the end of it, you would effectively see yourself in third person.
Yep,
like you were playing GTA, like real life GTA.
Yes,
I wouldn't recommend that, but you better see yourself from third person. If you actually got it tracked to the head position as well, if you looked, the camera could turn as well. It seems like a bit, you know, like it's a bit, I don't know, like a bit of a spoof or a bit of a, you know, a bit of a novelty. But you can guarantee once that's in the hands of your average person, people will find ways to use that technology in ever more creative and clever ways.
Certainly.
So yeah, at the end of phase one, we should have some HUD systems available for people to at least start getting their heads around and start seeing the viability of this technology. But we could also have the environment systems. Now, first people that came forward when I said that I was making the environment system, and I gave a breakdown of how I was going about doing it, the first people that came forward were the cosplayers. And the amount of cosplayers that I've come to me and said, like, if you develop this, I will buy one, because I wear my costume to these different conventions. It's boiling hot. It's you know, it's foam. It insulates your body. I'm absolutely sweating underneath my suit, and I can't wait to get it off so I can vent and cool down again. Mm-hmm. And in some of the update videos I've already put up, I've managed to circulate a cooled water effectively from a cooling system around the torso. And it feels like you're in 15 degree air conditioning.
Nice.
And it's just, and it's so simple from the products and the components that go into it. It's just so simple and it's so streamlined. You could wear it under your own clothes if you wanted. And on top of that, it's got carbon fiber heating. So if you get cold, you can turn the heating on and suddenly you feel like you're in a warm bath.
Mm-hmm.
I know there are products out there that are similar to this, but there's none that have integrated both heating and cooling into one single product.
Gotcha.
And being able to maintain your own personal environment, so to speak, is something I suppose us younger generation, so to speak, I use that term loosely. we're more accepting of technologies like that because we've grown up with sci-fi. We've grown up seeing this sort of stuff being used and kind of almost, I don't know, it's kind of borderline crave that technological advancement where we wear suits that are ultra sophisticated underneath our own clothes that, you know, keep us warm, keep us cool, keep us dry. So yeah, we'll have a few products at the end of phase one that in theory I can market and they can become viable products. That can turn a profit, that can feed back into the program, into the project. And then phase two, we'll have a load more systems that again can go out, they can be marketed, they can feed back in, and phase three again. And then at the end of it, we'll have, you know, Mjolnir. And in theory, I mean, some of the technologies that go into even the soft armor, mm-hmm. I don't understand why some of the technologies that I'm planning on implementing for the soft armor, we're not already implementing for our troops on the front line.
Even just
the cooling systems to be able to keep troops on the front. I mean, I've got friends who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they you know, this you're in a desert effectively.
Yeah.
And you're wearing all your fatigues, you're wearing all your body armor, you're carrying all your gear, and weapons aren't, you know, the lightest things in the world either. And when you bring all that together, these guys are borderline on the edges of heat stroke most days.
Mm-hmm.
Just being able to cool yourself, I mean, reliably with a technology that, you know, actually stands up to kind of the pressures of that kind of an environment. If I can make it work, I'll make it work. And yeah. That's kind of why I've seen quite a few people say, oh, you're not going to do this for 200,000. You're not going to do this for 150,000. It's going to be a lot more. Yeah, you're right. It is. It's going to be a lot more. But I've got other ways to fund it along the way. So that's what I didn't want to be gluttonous and ask for more than that was necessary. So,
sure.
Yeah. We'll see. I'll revise it if it doesn't work. And if it does work,
yeah.
Hey. It's all no, good.
That's very forward thinking and that's very entrepreneurial mindset.
Mm. Yeah.
Which I think definitely shows that that will hopefully prove to show that you're in this for the long haul and are thinking forward thinking about it too.
Fingers crossed.
So yeah, the GoFundMe is live and available for those that want to go support him. Do you have like a short link for it, or do you just have the link on your YouTube videos and that's installation00.co.uk/Mjolnir or something like that? Or
yeah so a quick way to get to it is go to my website, so installation00.co.uk/projectmjolnir.
okay,
and from there you've got the links to everywhere. I mean, installation00.co.uk, you've got a link to everywhere I am on the internet anyway, but yeah, that's the easiest, probably the easiest way to find it.
Very nice. If people are wanting to help out, not just from a monetary standpoint, what other kind of expertise are you looking for help with?
I'm honestly, the interesting thing about Mjolnir is it's so multidisciplinary. There are so many different aspects of science and technology and electronics and engineering that go into making something like this. And I've already got a plethora of people coming forward who can lend a hand in design and conceptualization and CAD design and electronics and this, that, and the other. I'm always interested to hear from people if they've got expertise, if they've got experience in these fields and are interested in getting involved. I'm always on the lookout for people who are interested in this sort of thing. I mean, I've had other people come forward that say that they all this, you know, for years they've been designing their own Mjolnir and, you know, figuring out how the Jesus things would go together and all the, yeah, and working around, you know, problems and bottlenecks in technology. And it's, I love hearing from people because there's always that chance that because I'm I'm in it and I'm on this project and I'm focused on it, there's always a possibility that I'm not seeing a perspective that's so obvious to anyone stood outside of it. But because I've kind of got tunnel vision on what I'm doing and what I'm working on, I just don't see it. So the more people that are interested, the more people that engage, the more people that comment, and even negative comments, like, push me forward. Like, give me the ammunition to be like, yeah, I can prove you wrong. Bang. Yeah. But yeah, anyone who can come forward and say, oh, maybe try this, maybe try that, it all helps, because you can guarantee there's going to be someone out there that says something that will fix a problem that I haven't even seen yet. And when I get to it, I'll go, oh, I remember someone saying about that. I'll go back, I'll find it, and it'll work. So any way that people want to help, I mean, just jump into the Discord, whack a comment on one of the videos, anything you want. And I try to get through as much of it as I possibly can. If you want like a surefire way to get in touch with me, I've got a dedicated channel on the Discord for Project Mjolnir for people to pitch questions, to pitch ideas. Just that's the most surefire way that I'll see if you've got a suggestion.
Very nice. It's a very ambitious undertaking. I am very impressed that you're even taking the time to do it. And I know a lot of people, and me included, wish you the best going forward, and that you come out on top of this afterwards. We're definitely going to keep tabs on what you're doing, because everything, just Halo in general, people like to see this kind of stuff come to life. I mean, people love seeing cosplayers. They love seeing the different Master Chiefs that are out there and the different armors, and being able to see the universe brought to life. So this is just going to take that to a whole brand new level.
That's it. And I mean, push comes to shove, if I encounter things that are just insurmountable, I can't get, we could always aim for ODST armor. I'm sure people are going to be pleased with an ODST armor.
Yeah,
non-powered, but it's still, you know, a beastie suit of armor. But hey, that's a contingency. It's a contingency.
Well, even if you get halfway on some things, it's still kind of pushing
the concept in the ahead.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to make sure that every mistake I make, every problem I encounter, I record, so that people, I'm not just showing my successes, basically. I'm not just showing this worked, this worked, this worked, this. I want to show people where I've failed, where I've messed up, where something's not worked, because I'll save that. If there's someone else out there that's just that little bit further ahead in the process, or couple of years down the line, they want to visit this idea and technology's come on and is actually, you know, able to do the thing that I couldn't do at the time. Mm-hmm. They should hopefully come across that information, come across those mistakes and learn from them, and then hopefully not make, and that just helps them get that much further ahead. So,
certainly,
hey, it all pushes towards an ultimate goal. So,
yeah, no, this is amazing to see someone making this and undertaking for the community, because we've seen like other technical stuff. We've seen the Warthogs in real life. We've had 3 or 4 like official versions of those.
Yeah,
I know cosplayers have done a lot of the like trying to do the whole like keeping yourself cool. Like I know there's one cosplayer that basically built a Reach armor and the bomb was the water.
That's clever.
Cooling system, and that's had hoses clever going throughout the whole piece, whole armor to keep him cool. There's the whole voice integrated piece with some of the armors I've seen, the little lights and magnetic pieces to stick the armor on and off. So seeing those evolutions from like convention to convention is cool, but then you're kind of just taking this whole thing to a brand new level, actually taking the material sciences and engineering that would be done within the universe and within the franchise that we know in Halo, but actually you're kind of like that. You're kind of like a community contractor in a way. You're taking it upon yourself. You're not being paid to do it, but like you're trying to develop that armor system.
Yeah,
as a commercial entity.
That's it.
Going forward.
That's it. And yeah, it's the support I'm seeing from people is just it is really incredible. And you're absolutely right. It's an ambitious task, no doubt about it. And I'm already foreseeing that there's going to be road bumps. I'd be ignorant. I'd be blissfully ignorant, but I'd be ignorant if I thought I was just going to walk through this, because I'm not. I know I'm not. I know I'm going to come up to some big obstacles. But again, even the most enduring big obstacles for systems like this, there's already emergent technologies that are on the cusp of being released that in theory could fix a lot of these problems and make this just all the more achievable. But every effort towards it helps, and every bit of support that people give it helps as well. So
very nice. What's the one or two things you think are going to be the most difficult for you to implement, or a technology that is maybe not quite mature enough, or you might not sure if you're not sure if it's going to be mature enough for what you need it to do?
One of the big Achilles heels of practically every powered exoskeleton system that's ever been developed thus far has been power. Being able to physically generate the energy you need in a small enough packet size, mm-hmm. And lightweight enough to actually be on board with the system and integrated and actually sufficiently power the suit. That's one of the biggest Achilles heels, and I foresee that is a big problem. However, I have...
Hasn't there been a lot of recent development in like portable fusion reactors or some kind of portable energy recently?
There has, yeah. And I've had a lot of people say, oh, maybe you should try using like nuclear batteries and stuff like that, because they're a thing. But unfortunately, nuclear substances are still controlled substances, and I don't think they're just going to, you know, be like, oh, hey, you know, this guy's ordered this much nuclear, this many material. Nuclear batteries. He's a YouTuber. Just give them to him. It'd be fine. So, yeah, there's been some interesting developments in the fields of nuclear power recently, but the more immediate or the more logical stuff I'm looking towards. I've got colleagues in the field that are developing solid state batteries and supercapacitors. Now, the solid state battery is we're maybe 6 months out from these things potentially having like real world application, being ready to be put out as viable products. And these solid state batteries are incredibly, the energy densities are incredibly high. Obviously, it's going to be expensive on the outset, but you know, it's something we can plan for down the line. It's going to come down in cost because the materials that they're using are relatively affordable. It's just a difficult process to bring them together, so to speak. So solid state batteries, they're potentially just around the corner. Supercapacitors are perhaps another technology that could find a way around it. I mean, the great thing about people like Elon Musk, for example, is he's been saturating the market with lithium polymer batteries, high-density lithium polymer batteries. I don't expect to be able to power the entire suit with just lithium polymer batteries running around feeling like a giant Buzz Lightyear. But
right, and then like how long do they last for? Like 30 minutes?
exactly. Yeah, yeah. You need a more enduring power source. But the great thing about the work that he's been doing, where he's been saturating the market, is that they've come down in price dramatically, which makes technologies like this more accessible to more people, and that leads to innovations. And you're always going to find people who take things apart and find new ways to orientate certain things, or new mm-hmm. ways, new compositions, new permutations of whatever it is, and find new ways and new uses. So, yeah, power is by far going to be one of the biggest hurdles to overcome. But I'm confident with upcoming developments in the material science, we should better develop a workaround for that. And the only other major thing that I've got sort of on the forefront of my mind is the actual process of physical movement, translating the physical movement of the wearer to physical movement of the suit and having them symbiotic. We've already got examples of that kind of system working in real life. We've got people like Hugh Herr from the company Barnix, and we've got like prosthetic arm developers like Open Barnix here in the UK, mm-hmm. and I'm sure there are a plethora of other ones around the yep. world that are using muscle sensors. Effectively, I've got a ton of them sat here somewhere, but muscle sensors to pick up the muscle transductance coming from the muscle and translate that into electrical signal to then be translated to the movement of the respective prosthetic. So the technology is already there, but it needs refinement, especially when you're physically wearing the suit. If you, without being insensitive, if you're missing a limb and then you have a robotic limb put in place, there's nothing in the way. If the robotic NIM wants to do something peculiar because it's picking up an odd signal, it will just do something peculiar. If you're wearing something that's robotic and it does something peculiar, you're inside of it. Yeah. And although I'm designing it to be structurally limited, and there's no way it's going to develop, I'm going to be able to generate the level of force or the speed to physically injure me, like you see the armor physically injure the Marine who tested it in the Fall of Reach.
Yep.
It's still of concern that you'll get a feedback loop effectively where my own micro corrections to my muscle position will translate to motion to the suit, which will translate to me trying to correct it to the suit and back and forth and back and forth. And that could become destructive mainly for the suit and set me back in development. And that's something that I'm still trying to finesse the details out of. But aside from that, engineering the plates, it's pretty straightforward. We've been doing stuff like that with tank armor and even more, you know,
body armor.
Trauma plates, body armor in recent years. The skeletal structure that actually physically supports the weight, so to speak, passively, but mind, that's what all the servos and linear actuators and attractive polymers would be for, to actually generate muscle and resistance. But the skeletal structure, it's pretty straightforward. We've been using those for a while now.
The soft armor who just doesn't droop with all the weight of the armor.
Yeah. Yeah. Soft armors, we've been using those for years now. There's been some impressive innovations in shear thickening fluids and dilatant armors. So it's just bringing actually quite mature technologies together in a way that hasn't really been brought together before. But of course, in doing so, you're going to come across unexpected bugs that need resolving along the way. But the two biggest, is the connection between man and machine. And the power systems, that's by far the biggest hurdles I'm prepared to come up against.
Yeah. Now, one thing you haven't touched on a lot yet, and this is kind of tripping in my head since I'm computer science background, is there going to be any kind of onboard computer that you're going to have to code for or program for using Arduinos or Raspberry Pi, that kind of integrated electronics?
Yeah, so the helmet systems are I've actually got them. So that's the laser-based Pico projector there. That's for the HUD systems. That has to be powered by a computer. It's not got any of the computational systems built into it. I can tear this down. In fact, I've got another one arriving which is already torn down. But that has to be powered by something. It has to be controlled by something. What's great nowadays is microcontrollers and credit card chip, credit card sized computers. Are a thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got a Raspberry Pi sat around here. I've got 36 Arduino Nanos. So, yeah, it's from a computational standpoint. Yeah, the helmet systems, they need their own computer. These microcomputers, the Raspberry Pi, the Arduinos, they're powerful bits of kit. Surprisingly powerful bits of kit. And really, when I think about the amount of systems in the helmet, if you think so there's microphones and speakers, there's a screen effectively, the projector, and then aside from that, there's kind of fans for cycling air and things like that. Really, when you weigh all of that up, that's not unlike your average smart device or a computer. You need cooling for your computer. Mm-hmm. You need microphones and speakers for your phone. You need to power a screen. It's effectively just a wearable smart device, effectively.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've got sort of provisions in place to be able to better develop the computational systems of that. But when it comes to the mantominous system of actually taking muscle input, translating that to motion, that's going to take a lot of programming, and I'm prepared for that. I mean, again, I've got 36. Muscle sensors. I don't know if you can see that. Muscle sensors sat around here at the moment.
Yep.
EMG cables and pads in packs that I've got. So I've got tons of this stuff there. They all have to be individually controlled. I was originally considering powering them from a single central computer, but I thought the load would be too heavy for the computational system, and I didn't want to encounter latency.
Yeah.
So I made the provision effectively that every independent muscle system would be independently controlled. So for example, you'd have, so for example, the bicep is one such muscle group that I'd be wanting to get action out of because that involves elbow flexion.
Mm-hmm.
So there would be muscle sensors at the site of the muscle, and that would be controlled individually on an individual basis by an Arduino Nano.
Yep.
Which would, it would be solely responsible for translating the information that's coming in from the muscle sensors and then processing that and outputting that as a digital signal. From there, it will be offloaded to a central computer, which will be in the back unit, which then deals with the independent articulators of the respective joint, which themselves would need to be specifically tailored based on their location, the force that they're experiencing at idle and under pressure, and how fast you need that respective joint to work. So the joints that are going to be taking more load, so like the knees and the hips and the ankles, for example, because it's taking the weight effectively of all the armor above it,
sure,
they're going to need to be more powerful articulators. So they're going to be, more than likely, they're going to be servo motors, like high torque geared servo motors, or they're going to be high power linear actuators. And then, for example, with the hands, for example, I'm trying to work around a system where we can actually get each individual digit with force amplification. But in order to do that, that's very fine motor control. And in order to do very fine motor control, you need something that you can control very, very exactly. And that's where I'm leaning on my previous experience of working with electroactive polymers, which the particular permutation I'm working with is not the cheapest. But,
I don't think anything about this project is going to be cheap.
That's it, yeah.
Except maybe the Arduinos. Yeah. Those are pretty cheap.
But the particular permutation of electroactive polymers I'm working with are great because they don't require a massive amount of voltage and current in order to generate proportionally quite high forces. So yeah, there's definitely some heavy computational systems that will have to be implemented to get everything working smoothly with itself. And again, I've got contingencies in place if some things don't work out the way I want. So for example, with the HUD systems, I'm 99% confident I can get the HUD systems to work as we see them work with, you know, like Chief's helmet there.
In game, yeah.
Yeah. But if for whatever reason, like there's something I didn't foresee or something I can't work around, something as simple as working with a helmet that would be similar to the Gungnir helmet, where you'd actually have a full face visor, full face plate,
mm-hmm.
Then you can implement something like VR effectively. But the VR would be more so that you'd have effectively a VR goggle system basically built into the helmet. So as you slide it on, the goggles come into alignment with your eyes. And it would be basically the screen inside would be broadcasting a camera view, a wide angle camera view, stereoscopic camera view of the world around you onto that screen within the helmet. So there are workarounds for a lot of the possible problems that I could come into contact with, but I'm confident I can get it literally working as close to law as is reasonable to expect with modern technology.
Very nice. It's going to be a huge undertaking, but we're rooting for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I say, any problems I encounter, I'm documenting them. So, if there is a big failure on the horizon, you will see it.
Yeah. Well, let's hope there's not as many of those, and let's hope for as much success as you can get out of this project.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Anything else about the project you want to share before we wrap it up?
Not immediately, no. Like I said, I've just about finished the functional components of the environment suit at the start of this week. The skin tight undersuit is pretty much there, and I'm bringing all of the components together for the helmet now. So phase one is well underway, and it's still early days, but the most exciting days are still to come. So yeah, if you can help out in any way, if you can help out, you know, from a monetary side, that would be great. If you can't, share it around. Because the more exposure it gets, every little helps. And even if you can, you know, even if you can't do that, if you've got ideas, if you've got experience in whatever it is that you're doing, throw me a message on Discord or throw a comment into one of the videos. Or like I say, the best place to find to make sure that I see what you say or whatever is to pop into Discord and go to the respective channel that I've got set up there for it. Yeah, early days, but there's some really, really exciting stuff coming.
It looks like it. Well, thank you so much for taking time to explain what the project is, give us an update on where things are going, and it sounds very exciting.
We are looking forward
to what you have going on. Sounds like phase one is wrapping up soon, so I'm guessing we'll see a nice little update video showing all that stuff off on YouTube once it's all done.
Yeah, absolutely. You can guarantee the second we've got the completed products ready, I'll be showing them off every way I can. I'll try to keep the skin tight undersuit out of it, though. I don't think anybody needs to be scarred with seeing my body in an extraordinarily form-fitting suit.
I don't know. You might have a couple of interested people out there.
One or two, perhaps. Yes, it's a niche. It's a niche.
That's for the OnlyFans.
yeah, that's it.
Well, thank you so much for coming on over again. Best of luck to you. This thing is a really ambitious project, and we hope that everything goes as well as it can for this type of project. Definitely understand with. Things will probably come up and things will happen, but it seems like you have a pretty good mindset going forward on this, and that you're gonna have some good success out of this project. So,
fingers crossed. Yeah, thanks for inviting me on to have a chat about it.
Yeah, for any of our listeners, again, if you guys are interested in supporting Installation 00, build this. I was gonna say once in a lifetime, but definitely a first in trying to actually bring the Mjolnir Spartan armor from Halo to life, then check out his website, installation00.co.uk. Check him out on Twitter, YouTube, his Discord server. Show him all the love and support that you are able and willing to give, and we're just super excited to see what is going to come about with this project over the next couple of years.
Thank you, fingers crossed.
Yeah, and you're continuing to grow on YouTube as well, which is also great.
Yeah, this is it. So I'm on the, I wouldn't say the home stretch, but I'm definitely on the path now for 200,000 subscribers. So, you know, Halo Cannon, I'm coming for you.
He's calling you out. Calling you out, Toe Freak. All right. Well, thank you again so much. We'll be back next week with DJ and Rage More Nerd as we're talking about the next draft for the DreamHack Griffball tournament. So stay tuned to that.
That's fun.
We'll catch you all next time. Keep on fragging the trucks.